Yes, it's that time of the week, Pet Chat, and we're joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabrett. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
G'day. Amanda, how are you?
Good. Nice to see you. And we haven't seen you for a while, Cheryl. You've been a busy woman.
Busy, but I'm back today.
And we're talking about dogs.
Yes, and about when you should and shouldn't pat dogs. There are times that you really need to be aware of what the dog's trying to tell you.
Yeah, that's true. And Dr. David Tabrett, have you got something that you'd like to say?
I will talk about dogs' eyes.
Eyes?
Mm.
The eyes have it.
Okay. Yes. The window to the soul.
They are.
But don't stare at a dog while you're trying to pat it.
That's
no.
Right. Very challenging.
It's Pet Chat time on 2NURFM and we're going to get straight to it. Helen is on the line from North Rothbury. Hi, Helen. How can we help?
Hi. I've got a 5-year-old dash hound and she's just started probably in the last 6 weeks trying to eat little rocks, picking them up. She's like a Hoover. Goes around and sucks them up. And we're just wondering, is it a dietary insufficiency or it's not attention seeking because she gets more attention than she knows what to do with. We're just wondering what it could be.
It's almost never dietary problem.
Okay.
These days, I mean, there was kind of this mythology around, you know, dogs will go and eat things that give them minerals. But
right.
Our diets are so well supplied and they're really not deficient in anything. And certainly the ones that I've come across, and I've seen a few dogs that do this, it's always a behavioural issue. And
okay.
So the question is it a displacement behaviour? In other words, is it I'm feeling stressed about something but it makes me feel somewhat good when I go and do something weird like eating rocks? So any kind of triggers, and like you said, you know, that it's not attention seeking, that so it may or may not be, but usually it's the opposite. It's actually she's not doing it to get attention. She's doing it because something else is causing stress.
Okay.
So this can be very difficult though to enunciate, but any recent changes in the household?
No. It's really since we stopped using the pool. She was in the pool with me virtually 7 days a week.
Did she have floaties?
Pardon?
Did she have a life jacket?
She's on her own floaty.
She is.
She swims.
Well, I'm just thinking because she's a dachshund, it must be a very shallow pool.
No, it's not, but she's always been in the pool virtually from, she loves water, just loves water. And we were swimming every day, probably up until April.
Yes.
Late April, and then because it got too cold, we stopped.
Yep. It could be related to that because there's been a change in pattern of behaviour and, you know, what you guys are doing, and particularly because it involved her. So
yes.
I would certainly be, one of the things I might think of doing is finding some other activity that you can do with her. Again, it's not about the attention side. It's actually about her finding a way to manage her anxiety. So I'd also be thinking about other changes in the local environment, even with neighbours and things like that. If there's other dogs or cats or anything coming around that causes upset. Other than that, then it does certainly get a little bit more difficult, but anxiety in dogs can appear in many, many forms, and this is one of them.
Okay.
So sometimes we do need to give these dogs medication to manage that, and that actually helps you then to train them out of that behaviour. Eating rocks is particularly dangerous because what happens is apart from the chipped tooth and things like that, it'll sit in the stomach or in the gut, and it'll actually erode through the lining of the gastrointestinal tract and require surgery or endoscopy, gastroscopy to remove. So I've seen a number of dogs that were repeat offenders and, you know, you get up to about their third or fourth surgery and the bank balance is starting to look a bit wobbly and the dog's almost got a zipper in their belly so that the vet can just go back in and retrieve the next one. But, it's better to get on top of that sooner rather than later. And as I said, even some speaking with your vet about anxiety and speaking about medication that might help you to get through a period where you can train your dog out of that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, no worries.
Thanks very much,
Thanks
Helen.
For the call.
Bye.
Bye. Next, we've got Bruce on the line. Hi, Bruce. How can we help you?
How you going? For a number of years, there must be something about my house. In fact, I think I'd better put the sign out there, YMCA for dogs. And I get a lot of stray dogs that often drop in here sometimes. In fact, some of them often stay overnight with a comfortable bed out the back. And, and it's got to a point where I ended up getting some books on various different dogs that have dropped in here just so that I know what to feed them sort of thing, you know. And I'm just curious, Doc, is there some reason why my place attracts these dogs to drop in like they do? It's not like the front light's on the porch or anything, but, you know, but it's just amazing how it happens, you know. And 90% of the time I just contact the local vet, bring it down, they're registered here, you know. And, And he said to me last time I took a Labrador down there, he said, is there something about your house? I said, I don't know. Perhaps I'm using the wrong brand of toothpaste, you know. And
well, do you have any dogs, Bruce?
Well, yes, we had a couple of dogs a couple of years ago, and unfortunately they had to be both put down just due to, like, general health problems with their age. And so whether or not the scent of the dogs is still lingering around the place, I don't know. But
quite possibly. And I also think that if you're a dog person, dogs are pretty aware of the pheromones that we give out as well, okay? So it's a welcoming space. I think the real secret, though, is something that you mentioned when you said you got to work out what to feed them. The word's gotten around that if, you know, you're looking for a warm bed and a good feed, head down to Bruce's place at Belmont North.
Well, mate, that's what it's been like. Like I said, I got to a point a few years ago where I went out and I got some books on the different brands of animals that often would sometimes drop in here. And trust me, the information was very, very good. In fact, there was one dog there. He came in. I don't know what sort of, I think it was a whippet dog at one point, and he stayed overnight. We contacted the owner, and oh my God, I think it was in a dog eat so much bloody toast in the morning. It was almost like who needs a diet? Just fill me up, you know. I thought, oh God, me.
Well, there's not much of them. So when they do eat, you notice it straight away. I don't think there's any real secret except obviously the things that we've talked about. It's a welcoming place. And I'm just kind of a little bit concerned too about the number of stray dogs that are wandering the street because, they can, before they get to your place or otherwise, they're going to be at risk of things like getting hit by cars or getting into other dog fights and things like that. So I kind of urge everyone around you to at least keep their animals home and make sure that, you know, Bruce doesn't have to do all the legwork of looking after the local stray dogs.
Yeah, that's right. Bruce, maybe stop feeding the dogs. Who knows?
Yeah.
That might help.
They look at you with those big eyes. What do you do?
I know. They're very cute. But, yeah. Good luck, Bruce. And we've got Penny from Shortland on the line. Hi, Penny. How can we help you?
G'day. I've got a 15-year-old Moodle. Mm-hmm. And he's grown up with his brother and sister, and all of a sudden, the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, he's been growling at them from a distance. If they walk past him, he growls at them, and I've had to break up fights. And it's just unusual because he's never, ever done this.
Is he de-sexed?
Yes.
Yeah. And the other dogs, what are they?
They're the same.
Same age?
Yes, same age, same litter.
And de-sexed as well?
Yes.
Yeah. As soon as we go to 15-year-old, there's two main areas I think of that could cause a change of behaviour, particularly one that's a little bit aggressive. One is that he's painful and that he may have some pain somewhere. So that could just be he's got some spinal arthritis or maybe some hip arthritis or something like that. It's just, you know, getting up in the morning, I'm just a bit cranky now, don't come near me. And he's just sending out that message straight away. So
this is all day.
Yeah, well, I've met a few people like that. They get up like that and they go to bed like that because it's, you know, chronic pain. Interestingly, even though it's just happened recently, but after a few weeks of some acute pain, chronic pain actually has a distinct feature where it's not just about alerting you to an injury. Okay, so pain is a nerve signal that tells us, oh, that hurt or there's an injury there. But chronic pain does something else. It actually modifies the nerves and it modifies the brain such that even when the original stimulus or problem, and arthritis, it doesn't do this, of course, because you've still got arthritis 2 months later. But with other things that are chronic pain, you can actually have the original injury goes away, but now the brain is altered. And so they have changes in demeanor permanently. They can also end up with things like changes in sleeping, eating, toileting, all related to chronic pain issues. So it can be difficult to treat the longer this goes on. So the first thing I'd want to do is make sure that he hasn't got any areas that are causing pain that could be producing this change of behaviour. And it's worth a vet visit just to get a full check over for that. And then the other thing, I said there were two things. The other thing I'd be thinking of is a cognitive dysfunction. So this is kind of like, I'm going to borrow the term, an onset of dementia.
That's what I thought.
And we do recognise in dogs they have canine cognitive dysfunction. And there's a couple of different reasons why this happened. Some of it is we think that there's restrictions in or decrease in blood flow to certain parts of the brain or changes in metabolism in the brain such that they, you know, they're losing the ability to cope with every day. They're losing the recognition of, you know, these animals that are around me that I've been with forever. I don't recognise them. Again, my sleep patterns are altered or eating patterns are altered. Those sort of things can all be indicators of cognitive dysfunction. So those two things are the most likely causes.
Yeah.
And one of them is more treatable, as in the pain problem, depending on where it is. Cognitive dysfunction, there are some treatments available. How successful they are is very individual, but it's worth a check over to make sure, because we don't want to have him in pain as well, if that's what it is. And if it is that, and it's only been the last 6 or 8 weeks or so, then you probably might be able to turn him around and get him feeling a lot better.
Yeah. Well, one of my other dogs, he's got pain in his – he's got arthritis in his spine.
Yes.
And he has like It's a brown powdery stuff and it's like an anti-inflammatory.
Oh, okay. That goes on the food?
And that goes on the food.
Yes.
He downs his food. But if he smells it, if Joe smells it, he won't eat it.
Yeah, okay. So there is...
And he's also on Tramadol painkillers, Ollie.
Yeah.
And I've tried to give Joe one to help with the pain because I thought he might have been in pain. And no, he can sniff that tablet out. And he will not. I can put it, mix it in with his food, and that's
and
the
he's
last
still
piece.
Fine. Yeah.
The last piece of chicken that's left on the thing is got the tablet in it.
There is some formulations now that we can get that might improve, you know, acceptance of medication. So it's worth having a chat with your vet. I would also just caution that we don't want to mix medications across to the other dog. And I understand you were kind of testing it out. But it'd be worth finding out exactly what's going on because there's different treatments for different types of arthritis as well. So it's worth getting him checked out for that reason.
Okay, good luck with that, Penny. All the best. You're tuned into Pet Chat on 2NURFM and we have Maria from Whitebridge on the line. Thanks for holding, Maria. How can we help you?
Look, I have a Staffy dog and it's my grand dog and it's my children's dog and he's a beautiful animal and we love him to pieces and we often look after him. But he has one bad habit and that bad habit is that he barks at other dogs and wants to attack them. He loves children, he loves adults, he loves people, but when it comes to other dogs, And it's really hard because we like taking him for walks and what have you. Mm. But, you know, that is a problem because, you know, especially the neighbour's dogs who are dachshunds, they sort of they do a little yelp and he goes for them. And luckily there's a fence in the way. So what we'd like to know is, can we modify that behaviour in some way?
Well, I'm going to say yes, first of all, but there's a lot to unpack and quite a few caveats. So first of all, how old's the dog?
About 5 years old.
Okay, well, we're losing a point already. Okay, so and how often is the dog with you?
Well, he comes and goes. Like, we've got him at the moment and, you know, like every once a month we have him for weekends and what have you. But my kids are planning on going overseas and they've hinted that would I like to have it when he goes.
let's just share this on 2NUR, shall we, Maria? You're sending a message now. They've hinted. So going back to the business as usual is what, about 1 weekend a month or more than that?
Yeah, look, you know, about a month, roughly speaking. It could be every couple of months,
All right.
But usually school holidays will have them for a week or so, you know, when they go away and what have you. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And do you have any animals of your own?
No. No, actually, we won't have an animal. We love animals, but we won't have one because we like to travel.
Very responsible. Very responsible of you.
Yeah.
So, and is he de-sexed?
No. And that's the other thing. I'm wondering whether that's a contributing factor. Yeah.
So, yes, it is.
It is. Yeah.
Number one thing I would be doing is getting them to speak to the vet about, look, with a behaviour management problem, particularly with males, we say, like, getting them de-sexed. Now, with males, that's almost always going to be very helpful.
Okay.
There is a chance that sometimes it's not. But if they, my advice is get him de-sexed, number one. It's not going to fix everything, but I tell you what, it's going to make life a lot easier.
Will that take that aggression out of him, you think?
Yes.
Is that what you're... Yeah, I thought of that.
But the other thing is, if they're cautious and they're, oh, I don't want to get him de-sexed and for various reasons, I'm not sure there's many good reasons not to in this case, but anyway, there is actually a medication that they can get. It lasts for 6 months and it's a hormone-blocking implant that actually stops the testosterone acting through the body. And that will effectively drop the testosterone such that it's the equivalent to being de-sexed, okay?
Uh-huh.
But it only lasts for 6 months.
And so
if they did that, they say, oh, well, that actually works. So then you would then get him de-sexed, or you just go and get him de-sexed straight away.
Yeah, when they go away, I'm going to do that.
Maybe you do, ask permission, Maria.
Maria, you do realise we're broadcasting. and it's recorded for a podcast.
Oh, my goodness, no. We're in trouble.
Don't bring us into this.
Oh, it's all on you.
I'm in trouble.
I'll take responsibility.
Look, and let me just touch on a few other things. Yeah. But until you actually get to that point, I would be very reluctant to take him out of the yard. Another thing that is worth doing, though, and this would be regardless of what they do about de-sexing and so on, is to also seek some further training and look at use of things like a gentle leader or a halter collar.
Okay.
And so, again, probably need to speak to the vet or a behaviourist about this. We're trying to work on a number of different levels of reducing the behaviour, the aggressive behaviour, assertive behaviour, but also giving you more control. So I wouldn't walk him, given that he's only with you for a short time anyway. And if I was going to walk him, I'd definitely have a halter or a gentle leader on, and I would probably say he needs to be de-sexed before he comes over again.
Okay, so that lead you're talking about, can you explain what that is to me?
Yeah, so have you ever seen a halter on a horse?
Yep.
Right? Yep. So how do people control a 600-kilo horse? They've got these halters on. Now, even without the bit, basically what happens is we have a similar thing for dogs. And so when tension is applied on the lead, what it does is it transfers that pressure to the bridge of their nose and the back of their head. And you can do this experiment. I wouldn't do it with him, but any other dog you can, well, ones that you know, you can actually put just two fingers on, one on the bridge of the nose and one on the back of the head, and the dogs become quite calm and subdued.
Oh, right.
And so,
interesting.
Yeah. Look, my two little dogs were terrible to walk together because Cheryl Shaw said, whatever you do, don't get two dogs, and I did. And then when I got a haltie or a gentle leader for them, they're a lot better. They're only terrible some of the time.
Okay.
So they work fantastic, but you do need to get them fitted properly.
Just on that, David, I'd like to mention, Maria, that you'd probably be better with a gentle leader because the halties tend to ride up and can do ocular damage, particularly with the shape of a Staffy's face. So because they're, depending on your Staffy again, they can vary quite
they're
a bit.
Broad or
but,
whatever.
Yeah, but what we're wanting to do is to make sure that the strapping fits correctly over their nose and doesn't ride up as you're walking the dog. But
There you go.
Okay. So what's it called again? A gentle lead.
Gentle leader. And get somebody to fit it for you and show you how to use it properly. I think that's really important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. That's really good. That's been really helpful because, I love helping my kids out and I love the animals.
Yeah.
But I just sort of thought, I've got to do something about that. I've got to find out if I can do something. And there I was coming back from the shops and you guys were on.
There you go.
It was meant to be.
Good luck with that, Maria.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Guys.
See
Thank
ya.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, next on the line, we've got Kerry from Valentine. Hi, Kerry. How can we help you? Oh, you there, Kerry?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can hear you now.
Yep. My cat's diabetic. He's nearly 12, so he's been on insulin for a good 5 years, but he's got bleeding gums.
Okay. Well, the diabetes is an interesting addition to this problem. Let's just separate these two things. So bleeding gums generally could be infection, so gingivitis, similar to what happens with us, I guess. So it could be gingivitis, could be that he's got some periodontitis, which is an infection in the tissue surrounding the tooth, or if it's gingivitis, inflammation in the gum. And, with inflammation or infection, you get increased blood flow. It's fragile tissue, so it's pretty easy for that tissue to start bleeding. That's one.
It's quite swollen, yeah.
Yeah, well, if it's swollen, then it makes me think inflammation. The other concern I might have is, whether he bleeding gums, I always worry that they've got a bleeding disorder. So either a platelet problem, which is the clotting cells in the blood, or a problem with the clotting proteins in the blood. So that's also a possibility. Diabetes does increase the risk of infection. I'm not so sure. Usually that's limited to the urinary tract. I'm not as familiar with cats with diabetes, whether they're more likely to get gingivitis, but 12-year-old cats are more likely to get tooth disease or gum disease. So the problem with the diabetes is it may not cause the inflammation, but it does have effects on the immune system and it does make it harder to get over infections or inflammation. I'm not quite sure whether I'd link them together, except that the diabetes is going to make the recovery a little bit complicated. So it's just worthwhile also with regard to things like platelet problems. Whenever you see something like bleeding gums and you think, okay, it may be an infection, maybe inflammation, but let's just check elsewhere. So look for signs of blood anywhere else, like in the urine, in the feces, or under the skin on the belly, for instance, roll him over, have a look and just see if, make sure there's not like little red spots here and there. And that could be a sign of bleeding problems.
Yeah.
No. So it's more likely to be inflammation The diabetes is going to make his recovery a bit longer, but certainly some treatment, because that can be quite painful, as it would be for us. And
yeah,
that's
painful.
Yeah, so I think he's going to need some medication to help him get through that.
Okay, Kerry, all the best with it. Thank you for
your call. And well done looking after a cat with diabetes for 5 years. Like, honestly, that's huge.
That is. Thank you so much for your call, Kerry. Really appreciate it. This is Pet Chat, and we've got Margaret from Anna Bay on the line. Hi, Margaret. How can we help you?
Hi. I have a cat that I've had for, well, 5 years, and she was 2 years old when I got her from the RSPCA.
Yep.
And since I got her, she's never stopped dribbling all over you and licking you. She can't get her to sit on your lap, and other than she'll lick you or lick your clothes and dribble all over them. And I'm just wondering. Yeah. When I first got her, I think I rang news about it, and they just said, "Oh, she's probably just trying to get to know you," sort of thing, you know.
But and she's still trying to get to know you.
5 years now. She still does the same.
Yeah, Margaret, she hasn't worked out whether she wants to stay or not. That's the thing. the dribbling, does that happen after she's been licking you, or is it just all the time?
Oh, if she's just sitting on your lap, she'll just sit and dribble all the time. And
okay. What about other times if she's away from you? Do you find puddles of saliva or?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay. I have seen cats do this when they're very calm. They're very calm. And, that's the other thing I was going to ask. What sort of cat is she? What breed?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, has she got a pushed-in face?
No.
No, normal?
Kind of a pointy nose, sort of.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
If you'd rung up and said, she's been doing it for 4 weeks, I'd be saying, you know, very similar to Kerry with her cat, we'd be looking at things like gingivitis or tooth disease and things like that. The fact that it's been going on, there is actually a form of epilepsy in cats where they salivate profusely. And there is, I'm gonna say Burmese, but I might be wrong, where they can sometimes get this excess salivation, and we treat it with phenobarbital. So it's a spasm or a overproduction of saliva coming out of the parotid salivary glands. I'm not sure it's entirely that. The reason I asked about a pushed-in face was what her conformation was like, and just making sure, you know, if they kind of have any change in their tooth arrangement or anything, sometimes it's hard for them just to constantly swallow. Mm. Other than
When I got her, she had cat flu, but that probably wouldn't make any difference. But I have a boarder staying at my house, and she loves sitting on her lap. She puts a blanket on her lap because she said, I don't want to be all wet and that. So she puts a blanket on and lets the cat sit on her.
I think it's because she's really calm. It's a kind of form of satisfaction.
She doesn't seem a calm cat. She seems a stressy cat. Like she's like the way she sort of moves, she seems to be stressed.
It might be worth trying some Fellaway, Margaret. Mm. So that's a pheromone that can settle her down. It's interesting that she's only dribbling, as you say, when she's sitting on someone's lap. So she may be a little bit more anxious than what you realise, even though she's sitting on the lap. So some Fellaway might be a thing, David, do you think?
I reckon that's a good idea. Mm. And, you know, a bottle's going to last 6 months or so.
I've got a short, really short hair as well. I've had her since a kitten, but they actually fight with each other a bit.
How long have you had this other cat, the British Shorthair?
The same time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
5 years about I've had her.
Well, the Fellaway
got the other one about the same time.
Yeah, the Fellaway might help with both cats, and particularly with that fighting, Margaret. You might find if you get one of these plug-in pheromones that both cats will settle a bit. And it'll be interesting if it does have any effect. We'd like to hear back if it goes well for you.
It's more Lucy is the one with the dribbling.
Yep.
It's more her that will attack Luna, but she will, like, she can't stand being near it. If she's on the lounge with us and Luna gets up, she'll run away. She just, and if she's on the bed with me and Luna gets on, she'll just take off. She won't.
Yeah, I definitely.
She'll, like, she'll have a swipe at her and.
Definitely get some fell away. Make sure you've got enough litter trays, so one per cat plus one, so you need three litter trays. These are the areas where cats around food, litter, things like that, where that interaction and obviously sitting on your lap, they're going to go, you know, I don't want to be near you, you don't want to be near me, and if I'm going to put up with it, I'm going to sit here and dribble. So.
Yeah. Well, all the best with that, Margaret. Hopefully, let us know how you go. And lastly, on the line, we have Julie from YE. Hi, Julie. You've got a cat issue.
All right. Yeah. Hi. I'm just. Yeah, I do. He had a blocked bladder.
Right.
And since I've just been trying to put a new flea collar on and do his flea treatment. But he won't let anyone touch him around the neck.
Okay.
The other side.
I'm gone off flea collars a lot. Mm. I just think you can do a lot more effective therapies because really when we think about what's going on, and particularly if it's a cat that's had a blocked bladder, stress is a big issue. Okay, yeah, so
another cat and they didn't agree.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. And putting a flea collar on and he's not happy about it, that's a stressor. So it doesn't even have to be the same stressor that he had before. And, you know, if you've gone through episodes where he's had a blocked bladder, you know, it's pretty traumatic. Like, it's expensive. They're in hospital for quite a period of time. And the more often they get this problem, the worse it gets and it's harder to recover. So I want to minimise the stress and I'm going to use something that means I can put it on him relative to his risk, so just thinking about ticks as well. And there are quite a few products now that we can put on them, what is it, every 3 months or 4 months?
Yep.
And then you're done. Like it's a liquid.
He doesn't like that either.
Yeah, but
you're
it's
really
going to protect
him. Hold him down. Yeah. I won't let him in his enclosure until he's had it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would definitely you're going to have to find something, but a flea collar, A, it's not effective, and B, it's going to be continued stress. So depending on your local environment, you need to have a protection for fleas and ticks, and the preventatives that we put on every 3 or 4 months, they're going to be the best ones.
Good luck with that. Sorry, we are out of time, Julie. Now, we haven't had a chance to check out our pets of the week, but if you'd like to check them out, you can head to our website, 2nurfm.com.au. We might talk about those ones next week as well. We've got Dexter and, I forgot the name of the other one. Hang on.
Rhubarb.
That's it. And the winner for our $50 pet food voucher is Helen from North Rothbury. Congratulations, Helen. We will be in touch about that. And, David, you in next week?
I'll be back next week.
Next week. Yep. Oh, we are blessed with your presence and Cheryl's, and we can talk about dogs again.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.